Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would. Number 11.
I'll move amendment 805-0385 and incorporate into my motion to amend on page 4, line 20, the blank would go from being blank to the number 11. Now, this is an office amendment to get it in the form we're passed. So just so members are aware, this doesn't preclude the discussion, as we discussed last week, of kind of an orderly process. But in order to have legitimate business before the committee, I think it's important to have a bill before us. So we're acting on the author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Zeller and Representative Pippen, we did have considerable testimony, but if you would like to sort of begin, because I don't think at that time we had the delete all, so perhaps you could speak a bit to the delete all and tell us about that.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We're here today, and we've, as you described last week, Mr. Chairman, this is not an easy decision, and as we went down the list that you laid out for us last week, the decisions did not get any easier. We know for a fact that there's a need. The health department said that we live in the communities, and as Representative Pepin will attest, and the surrounding communities know that we have a need out there, an acute need. First and foremost, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the legislature has been put in a good position. Fundamentally, I think that the market should decide this, but that's not the position that we're in today. In each case, with each of the partnerships that have been brought before us, Mr. Chairman, I think they all have exemplary. In some cases, I've had very, very close personal examples of the providers that have sit in here, and many know it's been Children's Hospital. I've also had a number of occasions to go to the Park Nicola facilities, the Alina facilities. So it's not, Mr. Chairman, that none of these participating members are bad partners in any of this. We're simply looking at addressing the need that is in our community. Right now, we have an acute need for trauma service in our area. The stretch of 94 that starts roughly around Monticello, makes its way down into Minneapolis, is an incredibly dangerous stretch of road. Any number of different occasions you'll see on the news at night, they're not only terribly traumatic, but many times numerous deaths because of the accidents on that road. That's an acute need. North Memorial, in their trauma and reputation with it, an outstanding trauma level, is one of the main reasons why we did pick them as a participant in this. Mr. Chairman, we'd also like to, as a market share and as a the little guy, so to speak, as well as our hometown, a lot of the members of our community have called and wrote letters to us, especially over this last weekend, and said to us that this is who I'm familiar with, this is my doctors, they are my doctors, we'd like to see an extension of that in Maple Grove. I appreciate the members' time. I know we've taken up quite a bit of your time last week, and this week again I'll be brief and thank you for your time today.
Representative Pepin, anything to add?
Yes, I would like to add on to what Representative Zeller said. First of all, again, I want to emphasize that we have an absolute acute need for a hospital in the Maple Grove area. And as I also stated last week, I think all three proposals are fantastic. I would be happy and honored to have any of the hospitals in the community in which I live. The process isn't a good process, and frankly, it's probably not the best process, but the moratorium situation being what it is, this is the way it has to be. The reason that I felt that North was the best proposal for the community was a number of reasons. The fact that North is a level one trauma center, I have to admit, was weighed heavily in my mind. As a resident of Rogers and representing communities other than just Maple Grove, but including Maple Grove, Rogers, Corcoran, and elsewhere, the stretch of highway that Representative Zellers mentioned is becoming deadlier and deadlier. And with the Cabela's coming to town soon as the number two tourist attraction in the state, the situation on the roads with no relief in sight is going to get worse and worse and worse in the next 20, 25 years. So that was a big part of my decision. Another part is it's the community hospital. It's where most of the people in Maple Grove and in my community in Rogers go to, and I had an overwhelming amount of support for North Memorial because that's the hospital that our folks are familiar with. The other hospitals are also fantastic, but it is sort of the hometown team, and that is an important thing to consider. Market share is another impact. I think competition is a good thing. I think we need to expand competition in the state, and I think that since North has much of the market share already, I think it's important that we look at that as a consideration. Again, all these are great proposals. I think any of them would be fantastic. But for where we are now in this point in time and for the many things that I believe North offers, that is the proposal that I'm standing for today.
Thank you. I think the way I had structured this last week was that it seemed to me that the question of need, there was consensus. When I raised the point, I believe I saw every member's head nod. So I don't think we have to belabor that point. I think I also then raised the question of number, and at least the subject is before us with, I believe, a number of 80 having been placed in this bill, so that's certainly an item for discussion in this committee. And then the other question that I raised was the question, actually two other questions. One was any conditions that might be placed, and I know we have some amendments before us, and we'll deal with those amendments in its right order. And then the final is the question about the placement, and your bill at least puts in front of this committee a recommendation on placement. This committee will debate and discuss that and ultimately vote on it, but I think it does give us a start point. I consider all of those, because now we have a legitimate start point in front of us, an item open for discussion. So I would, maybe what I would first do, because we do have amendment, Representative Goodwin's not here yet, and she has an amendment, and I have some thoughts. We've had some suggestions from the department on language, so it might be open at this point for at least if there are any questions or reactions, because I think we have now in front of us a piece of business that wasn't specifically in front of us last week. So I would open to discussion from members. Any discussion? Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I personally think that we didn't set up any criteria as to how we would evaluate these three proposals. And there's a large number of issues involved with this, and you know, I guess I'm not sure that we're ready. That I feel that the this committee is ready to make a decision on this at this particular time, and I don't think that we sat down beforehand and figured out what we should do, how we should judge these proposals, what the impacts are. And, you know, we all have our views as to which group it is, but I don't think we've really looked at it in an objective manner.
Further discussion, members? Representative Zeller?
Mr. Chairman and to Representative Huntley, and I would never never try to second-guess the committee and how they operate and the chairman, but I can assure you that between Representative Pepin and I and Senator Limmer and some of the other members in the committee I spoke with, I think we're all very well informed about what individual partners are going to do, what our community need is, and what our community need is going to be moving forward. The number of beds placed into the bill was 80. In picking that number, we didn't feel it a good or prudent idea to put any partnership, whether it be the North folks, the TRICARE, or Fairview University proposal, in a position where they A, may not be able to deliver, or B, we are building or constructing beyond our need right now. Going forward in time, there may be a need for 150, 250 or more beds in the future, but for this point going forward and looking very closely at what the Department of Health laid out for us, we thought that was not only you know, the prudent need, but also that we would not put any of these partnerships or any of these groups in a position where they may not be able to fulfill for our communities, which in my case is Maple Grove and Osseo, and Representative Pepin with Rogers, Maple Grove, and surrounding areas.
Chair, are you going to...
Well, I wanted to proceed on amendments because I think that bears on refining the proposal a bit. Representative Gooden is not here because I would like to process the A1 amendment first. Let me just tell members, I don't think it changes at all. The Health Department suggested a better wording. So if you have the Amendment A1 before you, let me tell you what the change would be. On line 5, strike the words capable of meeting the need for these services, all the rest of that line after services. And then on line 6, strike the word determined. And the way this would then read is, if the hospital, as part of its initial phase, provides inpatient and outpatient adult and adolescent mental health services, including adolescent services, as approved by the Commissioner of Health in consultation with the Commissioner of Human Services. So it just puts the role of a Commissioner of Health in a little more proactive role and was there preferred. I don't think it would change the intent of the amendment. If there's no objection, having talked to the authors about this, I think I would like to move on Representative Goodman's behalf. I would like to move Amendment A1, and then I would like to incorporate in that motion the amendment to the amendment that I just suggested, and that would be on line 5, after crisis services, strike the remainder of that line. And on line 6, strike the word determined, and then substitute in that area as approved. We have that amendment before us. Any discussion to the amendment?
Chair, just
Representative Huntley?
I think you're going to have to change to the page 4, line 21. I think
if we could just instruct staff to make this fit in the proper place with this bill, if you have the numbers right now, otherwise we'll just instruct staff. Do we have any suggestions as to where it would fit? Mr. Chen, we have a recommendation?
We're working on the language now, so we'll have something shortly.
Okay, any discussion while we're waiting for that? See, none, we're waiting for you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just while we're having a little lull, I'll be the Muzak if you'd like for the lull. There's no amendment to it, but I just wanted to raise the point since we are talking about what things that this hospital ought to do. I think that everybody would admit this is going to be a pretty generally well-insured population that this is going to go to, and that's nice to, I'm sure there's people that won't have some up there. And I hope that as this goes forward that there'll be some attention paid to the uncompensated care.
You just mentioned
Things in even a more proactive way. I think that may even help the strength of the proposal as it goes forward, that if whoever prevails in any one of these three, we've chosen one for the time being, but if they would show how they intend to continue their outreach, even to be not a mecca for it, but in terms of taking some of the pressure off some of the more central hospitals that have quite an issue with that, that would be, I think, a real strength. I have no amendment to that effect, just for a comment, and I'll leave it at that. So yeah. Thank you.
Another comment that I would make is that although I really agree that inpatient, outpatient, adult, adolescent mental health services are very critical, we can't possibly solve our statewide challenge in this area in this one hospital proposal. And we may certainly, I think, ask for it in terms of services that are needed within this geographic area. But I think it, from a broader policy point of view, it's incumbent on this committee to really examine it. If we want to mandate something in providing these services, we need to have a thoughtful mandate. I'm not a fan of mandates, but I think we all know that we have an underserved need here that is broader than just one small geographic area. I think this is fine for this area, but as a reminder to ourselves, we're not going to solve all of a sudden the need for additional beds in this field by just one particular area. Do we have the numbers? Okay. Go ahead.
What we would do is on line 2, change it to page 4, after line 27, and then we'd insert clause 4, and then everything else would stay the same except for line 3, as part of its initial phase. We may want to strike that, and that'd be, I don't know if that's appropriate anymore.
Could you repeat the first part? I'm sorry that I didn't get the first part. So it would, on line 2, it would still read page 4, and then?
After line 27, insert clause 4. And then the text would read the same, except for if you would like, we could strike as part of its initial phase on line 3 of the amendment.
I'm a little confused. I've got the on line 2, we'd leave page 4, and then it would say after line 27. Did you say insert?
Insert clause 4.
Clause 4. Are we talking about clause 4 from somewhere in the delete all amendment or something? Or
Chair, I think what we mean is that the language being added as part of the A1 amendment, it would be a new clause 4 of the delete everything amendment. So it'd be parentheses, small Roman numeral 4. And that would be kind of the internal coding of that language that we're adding.
Okay, well, I think we'll instruct staff to make whatever other necessary, but we will incorporate into this amendment then changing the amendment so that on line 2 of the amendment, after page 4, comma, insert the word after, and then I would say after line and the 21 be changed to 27. And then I'm assuming we'd be striking before the period insert, and then put the words insert clause and then 4. And I think that 4 is part of the actual language. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. You all understand that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The amendment is before us as amended.
Initial phase, right?
Do initial phase. The discussion, hearing none.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry.
Right. One additional part of that.
Yep. It did make some changes.
Okay, let's get Mr. Kahn first.
The committee also needs to decide whether or not on line 3 of the amendment you want to keep in as part of its initial phase. And given the what this is being amended to, you may not want to keep that language.
As carrying this an amendment, I'm okay with striking that. Any objections from members of striking as part of its initial phase? I think the operative sentences are still there. There being no objections, then I will incorporate as a part of my amendment on line 3, striking the words as part of its initial phase, comma. I will incorporate that. Representative Zellers.
That was my, I was just going to make sure they'd offered that, so I wanted to make sure we looked at it.
I missed that. Now we understand the amendment as amendment. All right, we're voting on H1915A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment A1 is adopted. Are there any other amendments or discussion, members?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Abler.
I just want to at least discuss the amendment that got passed out since it went to getting copied late. And it was turned in early, but the drafting was problematic. But just in terms of who should decide this sort of thing, this is in reference to the A050465. If I need to offer it so I can talk about it, I just want to offer a thought. I don't need to offer it at this point, Mr. Chair. But I've been thinking about this since I first heard about it, and I knew we'd be getting to some day like this where we picked somebody. And the question I kept coming up with, who should decide? Should the legislature decide? Should the commissioner in the report decide? Should the city of Maple Grove decide? Should Hennepin County Board decide? On Friday, someone told me the Met Council should decide. I kind of like that amendment, Mr. Chair, but I didn't bring that one either. And I think at the end of the, and there's a bill in that's I'm an author of, that says in these kind of matters that you should have a process and then take it right to an ALJ, let the administrative law judge decide. Because I think there'll be a judge involved here at some point anyway, just have an inkling, and maybe I'm wrong. Failing that, I guess we're here. And I'm not convinced that this is the right body to do it, but we are going to be becoming that body. What's not in place, as Representative Huntley mentioned before, is a list of criteria about when we really need a hospital and how big it should get. And one thing I find that I like about the proposal that I voted for earlier on was it doesn't increase the beds in town. it moves them across town a little ways and spreads them out more geographically. We're pretty aware that there's quite a concentration in the urban areas of some hospital beds, and some of the rural members will tell you there's none out their way. And some of the driving issues that are big issues for us as suburbanites are just the daily standard fare for the people living in the more rural sites. And so, but nonetheless, we're moving ahead with this. But and I'm not even offering objections to how we're doing it. I just wanted to at least present that there are many opportunities to weigh in on this thing at many levels of government, and it seems to have defaulted to us. I hope as the process moves forward that the dialogue is less about a specific group and more about what they're going to be providing, and the systematic needs and the supply side issues. Is this going to drive costs? Is it going to hurt somebody? Is it going to be better care? Is it going to be a center of excellence for every last thing? Will every widget that is existing on the face of the earth going to be here? Or are we going to have some focuses and some cooperation with the local other hospitals? As we discuss healthcare cost containment matters, we don't want this to become a cost driver. We want this to be a cost saver and a lifesaver. And is it an outpost? Is it a fully staffed thing? And those are decisions that are kind of far beyond this. But I want to at least raise that point. That was the purpose of this amendment. And so thank you for the chance to bring it up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. But I think you certainly raise fair points. I think this decision became all the more difficult whether we think it was laid out or not. A lot of information was laid out. The book is pretty thick. And it did attempt in the health departments and then, of course, from the individual groups to address all these kinds of things. The question of is the legislature the right place? We have made decisions previously when there was one proposal as to whether or not there ought to be an exemption. That was difficult enough. This is exceedingly difficult in comparison. Representative Pepin?
Representative Abel, I appreciate your comments. And going through this process, I've had that same frustration. There's not a great process in place, and we are where we are. I would like to consider looking at the whole moratorium issue, because after 18 plus exemptions, I'm wondering if it makes more sense to let the market determine this. I'm not sure that the exemption still makes sense. It was put into place in 1984, and I would be interested in at some point reviewing that, because obviously if it were working, there wouldn't be so many offers for exemptions. So that's kind of my two cents worth. And if there weren't an exemption in place, frankly, this decision wouldn't be here. It would be in the free market where it should be.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Chair, members, this will come up again in a couple of years. Scott and Carver County are growing, and they're going to have some traffic issues and some needs. So just wanted to prime us all. So as a re-election issue someday, you'll have to face that fight.
Well, it's certainly a mixed bag. And on one hand, here we are debating on perhaps one very small control item that the legislature has maintained, this number of beds, which even, to be perfectly honest, is a little strange, because there's all kinds of beds not used. So when you talk about utilization levels, what level are you speaking to? You're talking about the actual number of beds in use, or you're talking about the number of beds that may be on layaway and all kinds of things? So that part's complicated. In the meantime, we have no control almost of surgical centers, clinics, those things which pop up, and our reference centers from those places to hospitals. It is a strange and difficult mixed bag in an area where, the reason I'm probably hesitant to sort of let go, Representative Pepin, is that we don't have very many direct triggers that we can have in one of the biggest problems that we have in Minnesota these days, and that's healthcare cost explosion.
Sure.
Now, does it really control it? Will our decision here really control healthcare costs? I mean, I don't know. I think, though, the healthcare or the health department's report to us said that although it's in the best interest for somebody to build a hospital, they did say, though, very clearly that it's not in the best interest to see three hospitals built there.
Mm-hmm.
Signals, anyway, very difficult in a difficult marketplace like this. But Representative Abel, I think your amendment brings to light that difficulty, and as I said, I think last week, it's not necessarily a decision that a lot of us would like to deal with, but it is a decision by statute that we have some obligation to, and I don't know. We already did put in place, by virtue of the activities that were going on in the St. Cloud area, a relatively structured, that's why the health department did the studies they did. Now, is it enough? Should there be other criteria? I think that's an item for discussion. Sorry, I've rambled a bit, but any further discussion, members?
Well,
President Putney?
Mr. Chair, again, I don't think we've used a good process to do this. There's all sorts of other implications that could be affected by this decision, not the least of which is the status of our medical school in Minneapolis, which is in a sort of desperate situation in terms of it now depends on 30% of the funding for the medical school in Minneapolis comes from the attacks on the medical school physicians. And if those physicians aren't allowed to compete in the marketplace, and this bill as it is written will curtail their ability to compete, will affect the funding for the medical school. And we used to probably have a medical school that was in the top 10, and about 2 years ago it was ranked 29th, and according to the vice president for the Academic Health Center on Friday told me that there's a report coming out that will be in the 30s this year. And if you think that isn't bad enough, you ought to know that the University Medical School for the University of Alabama is ranked 19th, and we're in the 30s. So this decision today will have an impact on the ability of the University of Minnesota Medical School to fund itself, and I don't think that was ever considered in this process, along with many other items. So I just don't think we ought to vote on this until we've evaluated the whole process with a more objective view.
Kristen Huntley, if I may ask a question, you bring up a fair point, but at least I certainly thought about, and I think other members as well have, aside from where residencies may be done, I thought that there was a separation between Fairview and the university, that there was not sort of a money flow. So tell me what's the connection? How is the university harmed by making this choice versus, I'm assuming, maybe a Fairview choice?
All the physicians that are members of the full-time members of the faculty belong to I can't remember the name of it, but it's a health group, and that gets taxed by the dean for about 30% of their revenues. So all those physicians, and I assume there's, I don't know the number, but probably around 400 or 500, are treating patients, seeing patients routinely, and not just at the University Hospital, but all over the metro area. There are clinics, and if they can't retain their market share, then the tax that they can pay to the dean, which is 30%, is or not 30%, but it's a third of the funding for the medical school, won't keep up with inflation. You know, they need to expand like everybody else. And if they're boxed in, which this amendment as it's written does, they won't be able to expand. Now, this, granted, they could still have residencies in these places, so it's not a matter of where you train the students. It's a matter of how do you fund the medical school.
Representative Sellers?
Mr. Chairman, to that point, and Representative Huntley, in looking through the proposal that the Minnesota Department of Health put out, one of their key findings under Factor 2, the financial impact of the new hospital or hospital beds on existing acute care hospitals that will have emergency departments in the region. Their third point, kind of a summary point, is that, in other words, for most facilities, growth and demand will still occur, but be at a slower than it would otherwise have been. So I don't think we're going to see a dramatic downturn or a cut in anybody else's increase. I think it's just going to be in their service or their number of doctors used. I think the actual increase or the growth rate is going to be a little bit less than what they would normally be seeing. And again, this is just from the health department's report that's passed out.
Further discussion, members? Do you have further discussion? President Muttley?
Well, Mr. Chair, let me ask one of the authors then, what kind of emergency room are they going to have? Level 1, 2, or 3? at this hospital. And is that been decided? There's no conditions in this bill that I see that say what sort of emergency services they have.
Captain Salas?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that all of the groups that were before us, not just the North Memorial folks, are looking to have a level one trauma unit. They've all discussed it. I don't know if they've all put it down in ink. They have all promised us that. Coincidentally, they all promised us that they'd be constructing tomorrow, so.
Well, Mr. Chair, but there's nothing in the bill that says they have to do that.
I think, Representative Huntley, as an extension of the bill, we have considerable material before us that at least I think this legislature would hold anybody who seeks this as accountable to fulfilling the obligations that were presented in their proposals. And I do recall a considerable amount. I read through that fairly carefully in a section on North about trauma centers and their, and I've forgotten the level one, level threes, and so forth. As a matter of fact, it appeared as though that was probably one of their strong points. But I do think that in addition to the length, because I don't know that we can ever put all of the conditions of sort of the contract, but that we would expect whoever in the end builds a hospital to fulfill per their proposal. So there was a lot of talk in their proposal about the level of trauma center support.
And to that point, Mr. Chairman, and as piggybacking on what Representative Pepin said, and even with the amendment we accepted from Representative Goodwin via Chairman Bradley, I don't know that we want to specify, because if we find that going forward we need a certain part of our hospital to be to grow at a faster or slower rate, I'm very reluctant to put any specific or overly specific mandates into the bill.
Further discussion, members? Hearing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1915, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Do you understand that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Representative Otremba?
Thank you, Representative.
Okay, that's good. That's what I kind of think. We need to be on the way. You've
got to make it.
Thank you, Fran. I'm sorry I didn't want to come in this morning. My computer went down.
We took care of you.
Thank you.
Representative Tremba, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 910. What this bill does...
And I think it'd be moved for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your bill, Representative Tremba.
This is a traumatic brain injury waiver bill. What it does is, as you know, traumatic brain injury waivers include case management, foster care, extended home health aides, supported employment, independent skills. And there are about 1,200 individuals receiving these services right now. In 2003, the limit of the growth in the waiver program was dropped to 150 slots in order to balance the budget. And what I'm proposing is to allow the enrollment in the waiver program to increase by up to 500 slots per year. They expect that it would be less because it's been 150 and it would take a bit of time to get to 500. But we know that traumatic brain injury patients that remain in a nursing home cost us about $14,300 annually. And through the DHS reporting, there are about 2,524 individuals with brain injury under the age of 65. I have someone who would like to testify in favor of the bill.
Certainly.
Shannon Robbins.
Good morning. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have copies, by the way.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tom Goad. I'm the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 910. The Brain Injury Association is the only statewide nonprofit organization that supports the more than 94,000 Minnesotans who have a disability as a result of traumatic brain injury. As you are all well aware, the medical assistance, home and community-based services waivers are for many people the ticket out of an institution. For others, it's the tool that enables them to remain living in their home and community when the alternative is an institution. The governor's budget in 2003 proposal demonstrated that it costs $145,000 annually for each individual with brain injury in a neurobehavioral hospital who could be served instead with a TBI waiver. According to the Minnesota House Research Office on MA Home and Community-Based Services, waivers must cost less to serve the person than the institutional alternative. Waiver is already a cost savings to you. To be eligible for a waiver, a person has to be at risk of placement in a nursing facility or a neurobehavioral hospital. The Department of Human Services reports to the legislature resource availability and utilization in the home and community-based service waivers for people meeting hospital and nursing facility levels of care reported that with the data available in 2004, they were only able to serve 228 of the 713 individuals assessed and placed on waiver waiting lists. 269 of those were waiting for TBI waivers. House File 910 will address the current waiting list at 269 over the next 2 years and begin to address the department's projected need for an additional 734 waivers over the biennium. Without this bill, over 700 individuals will need to be served in more costly alternatives. This bill will reduce or eliminate the TBI waiver waiting list, reduce the revolving doors in nursing facilities, ICFMRs, hospitals, and RTCs, and in the best case scenario, will reduce the use of emergency rooms, psych wards, jails, and homelessness, the most costly and least desirable alternatives. This bill will also help people with disabilities due to brain injury live in their own home and communities. It may help them return to work and will allow individuals to build upon their own natural community supports. House File 910 is good business. It's a sound investment. It's the right thing to do. Thank you, and I'd be open to questions.
Mr. Brood, as long as you're here, we do have a fiscal note. However, it compares it to current law, but not to the governor's proposal. And the governor's proposal, I believe, has some savings expected by limiting growth. Do you have an idea? I guess I just didn't have it in front of me. I mean, because it's a zero fiscal note to current law, which is somewhat misleading, of how much in terms of savings that the governor's bill projected would we be not getting?
They don't currently. I could get that for you. The department might
have
it.
We can get that as well. If I just hope you knew that.
However, again, the folks that we're looking at are folks that are institutionalized or going in to fill the empty beds. So part of our challenge here is to get ahead of the curve. As long as we've got somebody sitting on a waiting list that will fill a bed every time we get somebody out of a nursing facility, we don't recoup the potential cost savings.
Mr. Chair, the number that I had was about almost $15,000 a year per patient in a nursing home that we would save if they were on a waiver.
And Representative Tremba, I'm trying to see in terms of the language, are you saying that this would be strictly for people that
right.
would be discharged from nursing homes? Or?
Well, I think the law already says you have to be part of an, you have to either be in a nursing home or in a neuro hospital. I'm not saying it like he would, but.
Or at risk for placement.
Right.
Or at risk. Right, right. Any further discussion, members? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify regarding this bill? No one. Representative Tremble renews her motion that House File 910 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. See no objections. So ruled. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you.
Representative Sanderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanders, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 2166 to go to the consent agenda.
Representative Samuelson moves House File 2166 be referred to the consent calendar. Is that a correct motion? We'll see whether we like that motion.
Well, there's zero fiscal change, so that should help. What this bill does basically is what, and all it does is extend the sunset date of the Traumatic Brain Injury Committee from June 30th, 2005 to June 30th, 2009. And I do have Tom Gold to testify regarding the bill.
Welcome back. Please, since we're in the record here, reintroduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tom Goad, with the Executive Director with the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota, and I have copies here. As you're aware, brain injury is by far the leading cause of death and disability for children and adults under the age of 44, with an annual incident and prevalence rate higher than breast cancer, multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, and HIV/AIDS combined. Minnesota Department of Human Services, TBI, Advisory Committee works with DHS to strengthen the infrastructure of brain injury service, create networks of support, and provide the opportunity to work with and develop initiatives and collaborate with the department instead of working at odds with them or bringing every concern forward to the legislature. Many issues can be problem solved and resolved through the Advisory Committee process. The Advisory Committee enables DHS to qualify for federal grant money through the Health Resources and Service Administration portion of the Federal Traumatic Brain Injury Act. Minnesota has received $500,000 in federal funds through the funding stream to date. Without the Advisory Committee, Minnesota will no longer be eligible for those federal funds. In turn, the Advisory Committee costs DHS very little to maintain and is not currently staffed, although DHS staff will send members to provide requested information to the committee. DHS also reimburses mileage for a few members who travel from greater Minnesota. Brain injury is being identified as a significant secondary disability among people with mental illness and or chemical dependency. The advisory committee is the one mechanism for citizen involvement through DHS that specifically addresses the needs of people with disabilities due to brain injury in Minnesota. The Advisory Committee has served as a reliable and important resource to DHS on issues regarding brain injury and the best practices throughout the state. The Advisory Committee is currently set to sunset on June 30th of this year. House File 2166 simply extends the sunset to June 30th, 2009. On behalf of the Minnesotans with brain injury, I want to thank you for your support of House File 2166. Thank you, Representative Samuelson, for authoring the bill, and I'm happy to answer questions from the committee.
Mr. Hill, I don't have any questions, but I do want to compliment you, your association, and the individual consumers who've helped over the years, I think, bring this from something that hardly anybody had any awareness to a much more acute and appropriate awareness. Thank you for doing that. I know for me it's meant a lot to get to know people and better understand a phenomenon that puts a whole different world on watching a boxing match, if nothing else.
Thank you, Mr.
Much more better appreciation. Thank you for your work. Are there any objections on any committee members in having this move to the consent calendar? See no one. Representative Samuelson renews her motion that House File 2166 be recommended to pass and refer to the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, I believe I see you here. Wait. While Representative Clark's coming forward, Representative Tao, having been here bright and early and had a time to review, would be willing to move the minutes of March 31st, March 30th. Looks like I've got, we had two meetings on the 31st, so it'll be both of those and March 29th, March 30th, and the meetings of March 31st.
So moved.
No, I got all kinds of volunteers that want to get before you.
Well,
all those in favor?
Excuse when I was gone.
all those in favor say aye. 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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Howell. Representative Clark, I'll move your bill. I'll move House File 949. Be recommended to pass, and I'm told that the Committee on Commerce wishes to see this, so that it would be referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Okay.
President Clark, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 949 is a bill that's been in the making for about 2 years. You know, a lot of our constituents are aging baby boomers, and some of us are having trouble with hearing loss, and so I don't know if anybody in this committee might find this important to them, but we might in the future, if not now. Thousands of hearing aids are purchased every year in Minnesota, and this bill came about in part because of a constituent of Senator Sams who had a very bad experience when he was purchasing hearing aids. And while what happened to him wasn't right or fair, it wasn't against the law, so hopefully this will deal with that. The Hearing Aid Dispenser Council worked to bring the stakeholders together to create the bill that's before you. It strengthens protections for children, adults, and seniors who need to purchase hearing aids. The Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People worked with them to get the support of the Minnesota Academy of Audiologists, the Minnesota Speech and Hearing Association, Self-Help for Hard of Hearing People, and the AARP. They all support this bill. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Tim Heidemeyer from the Department of Health. He will explain the changes that would be made if this bill passes.
Heidemeyer, welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tom Heidemeyer, Director of the Health Occupations Program at the Minnesota Department of Health. And as Representative Clark described, we've worked quite a while with three stakeholders groups that are very invested in the financial and professional services that are provided to consumers of hearing instruments. The first change to describe is on the bottom of page one, and this is more a technical change, but it's to conform to access to health care records. Consumers have a right to their health care records regardless of whether there's been a charge for the procedure in the chart. So we are removing the requirement that there's a charge in order to request your health care record. The second change is on page three at the bottom. This puts into the statute a clear expectation that the dispenser is to return a consumer's hearing aid when it has been used as a trade-in for a new aid, and the consumer requests it when they cancel the sale for the purchase of the new aid. The third change is at the top of page four, and we are extending the 30-day trial period to 45 days. And this will allow consumers additional time in which to try out and determine whether the aid is going to work well for them. Another change in this particular area of the language clarifies the counting of the days in which they hold the hearing aid for trial and when they have to return it by mail. It requires consumers to put cancellation in the mail by the 45th day, and in this way they don't have to guess how long it's going to be in the mail before the dispenser will receive it. And so the consumer knows exactly what they have to do in order to meet the deadline for canceling a sale when they're unhappy with the hearing aid. The final change is on again on page 4 on line 27, where we are capping the cancellation fee at $250. Currently it's at 10% of the sale price of hearing aids, and there's been an enormous increase in the sophistication and cost of hearing aids. It's now not uncommon to pay $3,000 for an individual hearing aid, and so 10% of $6,000 would be $600 for that the dispenser would be entitled to retain upon cancellation of a hearing aid sale, and so we're capping it at $250. And basically those are the changes, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Chairman Meyer, has been any indication from health plans or purchasers that this would have any effect on cost of health care or cost of premiums?
Mr. Chair, to our knowledge, this has no fiscal impact. The greatest concern that we had was the manufacturer's response to extending the trial period from 30 days to 45 days. And we have been assured that is not an issue for them.
I think that probably translates, because if there were going to be something that would cause, it would be coming from the manufacturer and then through the plan. So it sounds like it shouldn't really be affected. I was really talking more about the private marketplace. It sounds like it should not be. Any questions, members? Hearing none, I'll
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there anyone else who should testify regarding this bill?
There isn't. I do have another witness, Mary Lee Noel.
Yeah, I see a hand. I see a hand going up. I apologize. We're trying to rush too fast here.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, this is Mary Lee Noel from Self-Help for Hard of Hearing People.
Thank you.
We're just getting the FM system. She can't hear without here.
Madam Chair, Senator Sams, and members of the committee, my name is Mary Lee Noel, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today in support of HF 949. I'm here representing the Minnesota chapter of Self-Help for Hard of Hearing People. It's the largest national organization that represents the hard of hearing. Hearing loss is an invisible disability. If you met me outside this room, you wouldn't be able to tell that I have this type of disability. In large group settings, I need a captionist or a room that is wired with an FM system, as this room is. But without these accommodations, you wouldn't know. I would sit here and you would assume that I am understanding the proceedings the same as you. In smaller group settings, I rely upon hearing aids to understand what is going on around me, as do many of my fellow members. Many of our members are hearing aid users. Some are young and some are old. Most of our members pay out of pocket for the hearing aids, and the cost can range anywhere from $600 to $6,000 each. The limit that is set for the dispenser that he can keep in compensation at the time his fitting of the hearing aids is important. Right now, if the aids are worth $6,000, the dispenser can charge $600 for fittings for hearing aids that do not work. We know that dispensers need to cover the cost for fittings, but we can't afford to pay this much. The cap of $250 is much more reasonable. If the first set of aids doesn't work out, the next set of hearing aids should. Many of our members are on limited incomes. Most of us have to pay out of pocket for the hearing aids. Medicaid doesn't cover the cost. We need the added protection the bill provides to make sure the dispenser and the hard of hearing person have the time we need to see if the hearing aids work, to get our aids back, our old aids back, or if new ones don't work, and especially to put a limit on how much dispensers can charge if consumers need to return them. Again, thank you for giving me the time to support this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any question, members? Representative Samuelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have a question for either Representative Clark or someone else who's testified. And basically what I'm looking at is if the person cannot use the hearing aid, what type of process needs to be done so that it could be revised or fixed so that the hearing aid would be usable?
That's the question. It doesn't work with the hearing aid.
Chairman, I guess this isn't quite working for us, so I'm going
to repeat the question so Mary Lee can understand. The question is, if the hearing aid doesn't fit, what process do audiologists go through or dispensers go through to make sure that the next one fits? And I believe that this is Mary Hartnett from the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People, and perhaps Mr. Hintelmeyer could answer this better, but I believe that they do the best that they can to fit and choose a hearing aid that is compatible with the user or the consumer, and if it doesn't, then they will do their best to find another hearing aid that does work for them. Most of the time, they can work it out, but if they can't, then they find another hearing aid that, for whatever reason, the aid isn't compatible with the constituent or consumer, then they'll find another one.
Mr. Hermann, did you have a response to that question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Samuelson, Tom Hendelmeyer again. I think another important thing here is this really is a trial and error period. And the law provides for a tolling of the 45-day period for cancellation. For any time that the hearing aid is in the dispenser's possession and not available to the consumer to wear. So during this period of kind of back and forth, adjusting the aid or finding the right one, the consumer doesn't need to worry about the 45-day period running and losing their opportunity. So that's another part of the activity and really creating a context and an expectation that this is an ongoing working kind of relationship between the consumer and the dispenser.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Tremba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative Clark for bringing this forward. I have a niece who's deaf, and watching them go through the process of finding exactly the right hearing aids has sometimes been challenging. And right. But now she's a senior at Gallaudet University and wow. Made the Deaf Olympics, and I think they took second place in Rome, the U.S. team. So
outstanding.
That's very inspiring to know. I can just share with the committee my own father, who had an injury from the war and couldn't hear most of out of one ear all most of my growing up period with him and so on, was able to get hearing aids just a few years ago, about 2.5 years ago, and they were $6,000, and his whole world has opened up to him in terms of being able to talk in crowds and so on. So it's very can be life changing to have the proper equipment.
Thank you. Any further testimony? Anybody else wish to testify? Seeing no one, I'll renew my motion that House File 949 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pott.
Representative Bradley, welcome to your committee, to our committee. You have House File 1266 in front of us. Do you have a motion?
Yes, I would like to move that House File 1266 be recommended to pass, and I believe it's got a couple of committees. How about if we refer to local government?
Representative Bradley moves House File 1266 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Local Government. Representative Bradley, to your bill.
I'm sorry. Could we change that to send it, first of all, to Public Safety Committee, Representative Smith's committee?
All right. New motion. Here we go. Representative Bradley moves House File 1266 be recommended to pass and be sent to Public Safety. Is that what you said?
Public Safety.
Public right. Safety.
Yep. Yep. And we are going to make some amendments, but I think we can review the bill as is first, and then we can make some changes. We think we can avoid one stop and maybe reduce the amount of costs that may be. Mr. Chair and members, this comes out of some work that went on. I think, to her credit, Senator Berglund was particularly a part of this in trying to sort of work through some of the issues of people who are held for possible incarceration, and also in transitions, particularly people and mental health problems are not uncommon in our world of county jails and prisons, and we have some sort of bumps along the way, particularly when people leave. So I think if you go through the bill, section by section, just briefly. The first one, section one, has to do with purchasing, and this allows the Commissioner of Corrections to participate in a purchasing pool, and then also for local governments. We have times at times when the mental health bill or mental health prescriptions that are purchased are not compatible, or there's different cost pictures, so this would allow local governments as well to participate. Section 2 deals with discharge, and this allows the Commissioner of Health, or establishes the Commissioner of Health, will offer and develop a plan in collaboration with the Corrections Department for every offender who has a diagnosis of mental illness, and then creates it makes an exemption to a kind of a current law that puts a restriction saying that can only be done if they've been hospitalized or in a residential treatment facility, and there are people who suffer from mental illness problems that don't meet that criteria but do need services. There then is created out of the Department of Human Services a discharge planner that would be more proactive and actually planning for people's move to whatever program may be appropriate as they're discharged. Section 3 is the issue I said before about detained but not necessarily yet sentenced, that they would be covered. And then Section 4 is an appropriation section, which we will be striking that. So, Mr. Chair, with that, let's see if we can do some adjustments. First of all, I would move to amend by striking on... let's do it one at a time so it's fairly clean. On page 5, to strike Section 4.
Representative Bradley moves to amend House File 1266 by... striking on page 5, section 4. Members, any questions? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, in section 3, I assume you're covering people with medical assistance who were not covered before. If the people are on work release or whatnot, home monitoring, isn't that going to have some impact?
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, although we'll go back to that, this is the amendment's not about that, but we will still have the fiscal note. And there are the fiscal note, I think you have a preliminary before you that has some department costs, so we won't be eliminated at all. So, yes, there would be some costs there, as those people would be eligible.
Okay.
All right, members, any questions to Representative Bradley's amendment?
And Mr. Chair, maybe might just as well do this. At the same time, I would like to substitute, and I apologize. These are things that have been happening in sort of real time, especially this week. I'd like to substitute then a new Section 4, which would be Section 4, effective date, and we do have this in sort of handwritten form. And what it would say in that section is this act is effective August 1st, 2006, or upon health match implementation, whichever is later. And this will help reduce some of the expenses as well.
Representative Bradley, are you proposing an amendment to the amendment?
I would like to incorporate that in my amendment so I can take care of that Section 4 entirely and have a new effective date section.
All right, members. So in front of us is Representative Bradley's amendment, which he has now just, let's see here. So it's page 5, getting rid of Section 4 and replacing it with the language Representative Bradley just said. Is there any... Representative Bradley, could you repeat your language once more here?
Yeah, certainly, and we can provide a copy of this to our staff as well. But it would say Section 4, parentheses, effective date, parentheses. This act is effective August 1st, 2006, or upon health match implementation, whichever is later.
All right, members. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, we'll proceed to vote. Representative Bradley, are you ready to vote on this?
Yes.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of Representative Bradley's amendment, House File 1266, as amended, or is that incorporated? He incorporated the changes.
I'm sorry. The amendment is to replace the current Section 4 with the language that I said, and that would need to be acted upon by the committee.
Okay. All right. Now I think we're straight. At least some of us are. All right, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment passes. Representative Bradley.
And Mr. Chair, members, with again apologies, I do have a couple of additional verbal amendments to offer. On page 2, line 32, this is just sort of a grammatical fix. After the word forward, put the word them. So it'd be and forward them to the appropriate local entity. And on page 4, line 32, to change the 30-day to 60-day. And that one is a little more substantive, but that was an amendment that was adopted in the Senate. I'm just trying to line it up with the Senate.
Representative Bradley, for my purposes, page 4, what was the line
page
reference?
Page 4, line 32.
Line 32.
Change the number 30 to 60.
All right, Representative, does that also change line 34 or not? I'm just...
No. No.
Okay.
No.
All right, so Representative Bradley moves to amend House File 1266 by adding the word them after forward on line 32, page 2. And page 4, line 32, striking 30 and putting 60 there. Members, any questions to that amendment? Seeing no questions, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. Amendment passes. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, that will change. I'm not saying that there won't be, because it'll still have to come back to our committee when it finishes its path, because there will be still some fiscal note, but I think that will change it rather significantly. But I think with that, I've reviewed the bill previously, and we'll stand for questions.
Any questions, yeah, members? Representative Hunt?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just had a comment on Section 3, where we're it's a small step towards universal coverage, but we're now going to cover prisoners on work release. It's too bad we can't do the same for working folks.
Representative Bradley, any further comments, any further questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I'm just not quite prepared to make that leap.
I didn't think so. All right, so no further questions. We'll proceed to vote. Actually, I'll renew Representative Bradley's motion that House File 1266, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion passes.
I've had to keep that one.
Representative Seifert?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, roommate.
Chairman, members, I have House File 956. I just need someone to move it for consideration. I believe it's going to be laid over.
I will move House File 956 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Seifert, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, House File 956 was brought to me by a constituent who has a child that suffers from what people would commonly know as autism or autism spectrum disorders. Over the last several years, their families had a lot of challenges, including parental fees, which hopefully the committee can work on that as well. But in addition to the stress of that situation, the family has run into kind of a recent change. I believe it was 2 years ago, on requiring annual, if you look on page 2, annual diagnosis on the health condition, which the mother and child has said is difficult on the family. The professionals have basically made the determination that the child's situation is not changing, but thinks that it's in the best interest of the family, the child, to go to every 3 years in this situation. And what I did was change sub 5 to once every 3 years to reflect what the mother is interested in. I apologize, she was not able to make it up today. But I know that there are some concerns, and Sue Aberholden is here, who has some suggestions to perhaps address this family situation, but still allow the diagnoses to move forward on an annual basis for those who wish to do that. I do know the preliminary fiscal note, which was not my intention, gives us over $1 million in savings. But that wasn't my intent, was to save money for the committee. But the unintended consequence of that apparently is that there's money saved under the original bill. I'd like the committee to hear out Ms. Aberholden's concerns and comments on improving the bill, and hopefully she can give us some language that that could get amenable for all parties on this. But this family has expressed interest, and then there are other families I have run into with children who have autism who would like at least an opt-out situation to go to every 2 or 3 years and not annually. They feel it is hard on the children to go through that every year, especially when the situation really isn't changing in the minds of the professionals that deal with the children. So I'll turn it over to Ms. Aberholden, who has some comments and perhaps some suggestions on changing the language, Mr. Chairman.
One second here. Representative Bradley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert, just to make sure for the record, our preliminary fiscal note talks about $150,000 savings for the biennium.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misread that, Mr. Chairman. That's why you got so excited.
Yeah.
I was just glancing down at it here. I just buzzed in this morning, so I just had to handle it.
I was wishing, but the numbers didn't change when I looked down.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, Ms. Aberholden, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Aberholden, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Minnesota. Our concern is that when this was changed to go to annually, it's really best practice. Children who have a mental health disorder actually change frequently. Diagnoses are based on behaviors. Behaviors change sometimes from year to year, and the treatment plan changes. I understand the problems when you're talking about autism spectrum disorders, because many children with autism actually end up in the developmental disability system, but there's some children who have higher cognitive skills who end up in the children's mental health system, but truthfully they don't necessarily change a lot, so they're kind of, they don't really fit necessarily in, under either system. And so one way to address this would be to say that for children with autism spectrum disorders, the diagnostic assessment may be completed every 3 years instead of annually at the request of the parents or guardians. And that way we're still keeping best practice going in children's mental health, but allowing those families whose kids have autism where they don't really quite fit, frankly, into either system be able to opt out because, in fact, their child isn't changing their behaviors frequently.
Any questions, members? Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only issue I have is there are several varieties of autism spectrum disorder, and this maybe is still a little bit too broad, because I do know that children's diagnosis changes, and that sometimes they're multiply diagnosed, and sometimes that changes every year, and symptoms that look like bipolar or something else can end up being schizophrenia, and it's very important to get the correct treatment and the correct medication. Perhaps we could even narrow it just a little more, because I worked with children with autism but also had many multiple diagnoses, and it was very important that they were on the correct medication. And we're getting the correct treatment and so forth. So I don't want to, I don't want to hurt Representative Seifert's bill or his idea here to take care of his family that's concerned about this, but perhaps we can work on that a little bit. I would suggest that it's very important.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur with Representative Goodwin. Even in autism, there are some cases with intensive behavioral treatment where there's major transformations in a very young, particularly, seem to be susceptible to that. And if you waited at 3 years, you might be having the opposite effect. You might be having people eligible for treatment that's fairly costly that isn't really necessary. So I'm not sure exactly what the fix is. It sounds to me like you're open to some suggestions. I don't know. I don't think we can sit here and do it, but it'll be held over, and before we come back with some language, if there can be some work. But I think even to limit it to the autism spectrum would need to be a little more precise than that. It's a complicated world. There's people that you see, and probably the people that you've dealt with, Representative Seifert, that you really scratch your head and say, why in the world, because this isn't going to change. but that's not always the case.
And I'd concur, Mr. Chairman. I'm by no means an expert on this, and would kind of ask for the family to be in contact with both NAMI and the department and the committee and try to work out some proper writer language on this one. I certainly don't have the expertise on this, but in talking with the family and what the child goes through every year and what the professionals have said, it certainly made sense to at least go to every 2 or 3 years, but I don't want to sweep in all these families unintentionally, and as you said, with multiple diagnoses or with the situation of where they're either eligible for treatment when they shouldn't be or should be getting treatment when they're not, one or the other is a bad situation, and so that's one reason I want to just hear out the concerns and have it laid over.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Goodwin, to that point?
Yes, to that point. I have a suggestion. You might say that with a decision between the parent or the guardian of the child and the physician, that it be done only once every 3 years, because a physician or knows what kind of spectrum disorder they have, and there are kinds that you could wait that long, but you might make it's still making the specific to autism spectrum disorder, but that it would be a decision between the parent and the guardian and the physician, something to that effect.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Goodwin, I like that suggestion. I just have a question, and it may not be a relevant one or not. I don't know. I'm just interested as it relates to some of the enrollment plans, whether it is our public assistance or one of the waiver programs or even Social Security disability, as it relates to some of the plans that ask for updated information. And in moving to a 3-year plan, how would that affect some of those?
Ms. Averholm?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I think for Social Security, it doesn't have to be like within the last few months or anything like that. I would really have to go back and check. Because it is in the developmental disability system, I'm assuming that it's probably fairly, flexible in that way, but I would really need to go back and check on that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be great. I'm just curious. I know of a family that has, their daughter has Down syndrome. In some of the, even though it's based on financial, it's still always asking for up-to-date current information as it relates to her medical situation.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I'll get back to you on that.
All right. Any further questions, members? Sounds like the plan is in place to work on this as it goes through the process. So with that being said, the chair will renew his motion to lay over House File 956 for possible inclusion. All right, Representative Bradley, any housekeeping?
Well, we've completed our agenda for today, and I'm grateful for that. So we'll not be meeting after session as a committee. We'll be meeting again tomorrow morning, and I believe we published the agenda for that already, so we have a good deal to cover tomorrow.
All right, with that being said, this meeting is now adjourned.